All lines are now bridged.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you back to the EHR Reporting Program Task Force. We're really appreciative of all the task force members' help throughout this process, and we are going to kick off our meeting with roll call. I'm going to start with our co-chair, so when I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Raj Watlani.
Here.
Jill Shoemaker.
Here.
Sahi Bhatt. Jim Gerges. Brian Takaris.
Present.
Joseph Kunich.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Ben Mandel. Abby Sears. Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Cheryl.
Cheryl Turney.
I think we're getting some feedback from your line. Thank you. Cheryl Turney, I believe she's absent today. She'll be back. Stephen Waldron.
Here.
Great. Thank you very much. And now I'd like to turn it over to our co-chairs, Raj and Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Welcome back, everybody. So very quickly, we have a pretty full agenda today, as we likely will for the majority of these meetings. We're going to do a quick recap of the patient access measures. So Steve Waldron will be just leading that discussion and walkthrough of those. So we'll spend a little bit of time on that. The bulk of our time is going to be focused on the public health measures, and Brian and Sasha have agreed to take this one on. And we'll do our best to leave ample time for public comment, because I understand that there are several folks that want to comment, and then we'll adjourn. So we can jump in. Last meeting, we spent a little bit of time going over kind of the overall charge of the task force and the different measures and so forth. We're going to skip that to save a little bit of time. So the slides are there, were sent out, and we're there. But we can go right over to the meeting process. So if we can please jump to slide 6. We met to discuss the best way to kind of work operationally. And so we're going to make a little bit of an adjustment today as we walk through these measures. So we have the Urban and ONC team that, as always, have been capturing notes for us. But in addition to that, we are going to capture the recommendations that are coming out of our discussions. And those are essentially going to fall into two categories. There's going to be some recommendations that I think that the task force overall agrees on. And so we'll put that as new consensus recommendations. And then there's going to be some items that we don't fully have consensus on, but that are potentially some good ideas, and so we're going to document those in a separate section. I don't think we're able to show both the presentation and those recorded recommendations at the same time, so we'll just have to flip-flop between those two, and so if people are feeling like they want to see the recommendations that are being documented in real time, we can flip over that away from the presentation, but my understanding is that it's not feasible for us to present both at the same time. So that'll be the process change that we're making here. And then after the meeting, the ONC and Urban teams will synthesize the recommendations a little bit further that have been captured. They'll go back to the folks that are leading. Well, they'll come to Jill and myself, and then they'll go to Bryant and Sasha for some additional refinement. So that's going to be the process that we're going to use for each of these meetings where we're diving into the different measures. Okay, so that covers meeting process work. We can then jump to the next slide. I think this is we've covered this, so I'm going to skip over this one as well, and skip over the next slide as well, and we're going to go right to slide 9, so we can recap the preliminary recommendations for patient access measures. Steve Waldron, if you're on, do you want to kind of walk through the recommendations that emerged?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. As Raj says, there's kind of two categories here, first being, I think, the ones that seemed like we did agree on, and then those that seem like recommendations that were made but maybe didn't get complete consensus on the group. So those that we did, I feel like, got agreement on. The first was how we would prioritize the measures. So they were prioritized as they were listed. So the one that was listed number one was the highest priority. That listed number two was the second highest priority. The next one that was that the definition of active patient would be that of one encounter within the reporting period. So those two seem to be pretty good consensus-wise. Maybe just a second, if anybody disagrees, kind of right now, I know we're not necessarily voting, but if anybody has any concern about those being potentially the ones that we kind of think make sense to put toward a vote later, makes sense. Please air that right now. Great. So the other recommendations then for further discussion. So maybe let me take, if you're looking at the Word document, which is on the screen, let me jump to the last one because it deals with the further clarification of the recommendation that we think we are in agreement on as regard to the definition of active patient. One thing that was brought up was what constitutes an encounter, and there was a recommendation that maybe we should put together a list, or a list should be put together, of CPT codes that would represent what we mean by an encounter. And to recap, we talked about the potential of, telemedicine visits and other visits like that. Do they kind of, should they be included? I guess any concerns about trying to put together such a CPT list? All right, so maybe Cheryl and I can kind of put together a straw man or for our next meeting or so and bring that back to the group for consideration. Okay, so let's head back up to the top of the recommended. So one other was that we talked about the capturing of who is using the either portal or third party access and determining if we should try to have a measure around a proxy use needing to be captured. My personal concern is I think that adds a lot of complexity and challenge and kind of where we're at in regards to patient access. I just don't think it's worth the squeeze at this point in time, but I think it's something to consider at a later time. And I guess Raj and ONC team, were you thinking we were trying to disposition these to kind of come up with what the recommendations would be, or were we just to kind of reiterate that these are the ones that we're trying to determine if they should be a recommendation or not, and then offline kind of disposition them and what the actual recommendation would be?
So we have about 10 minutes to go through these recommendations, 10 minutes more. So, if it warrants a little bit further discussion or if there is some consensus on these and we can move them up to the agreed upon recommendations, great. But any lengthy conversation about these, I think we'll need to take offline or reconcile through another means.
Okay, great. So anybody thinking that having a measure around proxy use, again, so this would be a caregiver or other, is a high enough priority that it needs to be in this first round of our recommendations on what should be patient access measures.
Can I clarify your recommendation, Stephen?
Sure.
So when you say determine if proxy use needs to be captured, are you suggesting that the measure would explicitly exclude proxy access? Or simply that the measure would not differentiate whether a proxy was accessing the patient's data or whether the patient were doing it herself?
That's good. And, we didn't really talk about that. I would say the latter, that we wouldn't require the reporter to differentiate as long as access was achieved. But I'd be interested to see what others think.
Thanks.
I don't know if you guys are monitoring the hands, but this is Stephen.
Yeah,
Steve, my hand up.
Stephen, please go ahead. We just saw it. So please, you go first, and then I believe Zahid is next.
Yeah, so I think that the way Sasha characterized that is appropriate, that I think we're, our intent, or my suggestion would be to not differentiate patient access and proxy access. I think we're just talking about access at this point. I think differentiating those in the future might be interesting. You know, I like the way, Steve, that your group put these together, and I certainly agree with all the ones you've noted so far. And I think that we have been invited to, I believe, prioritize and say, you know, let's start with this and then, you know, in subsequent iterations move on to that. And I think that is a good thing for us to do, to try to set priorities. I think one of our real goals here is for this whole program to be successful. And the way to make it successful is to keep it skinny and doable, you know, the first time out of the gate, and then learn from and build on that in subsequent iterations. One thing that I know you're about to get to is, you know, that last bullet about the numbers of users. I mentioned this, I think, maybe in the document, and I'll just mention it again. I don't think we should skip over 1,000. I think that, you know, we should get each order of magnitude in there. This is on your slide 13, as well as there. So, yeah, we don't want to lose an order of magnitude there, because I think a lot happens between 100 and 10,000.
Great. Okay. And I think Zahid is on now. Zahid, do you want to go ahead with your question or comment?
Yeah. Hi. So in this active patient definition, is the intent to include all encounters or just ambulatory encounters? Does it include the inpatient encounters as well?
And I guess, so this is Steve, and I mean, I think that's a good point. I guess we'll probably have to include both, because there's going to be some cert that's only certified for one of those two environments, your ambulatory or inpatient. So I think we'll have to have CPT codes for both. That would be my
opinion. Right. And so that's where I was going to recommend to add the inpatient SNOMED codes. The ED and inpatient measures are using SNOMED codes instead of CPT.
Is Cheryl on today? I don't remember seeing her in the...
I don't think she was able to make it today.
Okay.
Yeah, Cheryl had a conflict. She couldn't.
Okay, I just saying I don't have as much familiarity with all the different types of inpatient codes, so probably if Cheryl does, then we're okay, but if not, may need a volunteer to help us make sure that we get that.
Sure, I'd be happy to volunteer, because, you know, we do a lot of that.
Okay, awesome.
Current reporting.
Great, thank you.
Any other?
I don't see any others. Any other comments or questions for Steve?
Just support for that notion that we should be looking both at inpatient and ambulatory and differentiating them, and knowing that some products are certified one way or the other, so it should be product specific, ideally.
Are we able to move that one up? I think this the notion of product specific, inpatient, outpatient, are we able to move that up to the agreed upon? Is there anybody that disagrees with that?
I don't know if a patient has both an hospitalization and an ambulatory visit and logs into their portal, how you would report it in a product specific way. If we want to specify that we would count that for both products, then I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know how you differentiate. The access to the portal
agree,
is not
Sasha.
Specific to an ambulatory or inpatient product.
Yes, it should be counted for both products. If they have an inpatient encounter in the reporting year and they log in, it gets credited. If they have an ambulatory encounter in the reporting year and they log in, it gets credited. I think that's the simplest way to do it.
Agreed.
Okay. So let me make sure.
Yeah,
go ahead.
This is Zahid. Just one more comment in relationship to that differentiation. I think there was a suggestion or at least a sort of consideration for creating stratification around inpatient and ambulatory, and I think you'll have the same issue there because the measure is at the patient level and it doesn't get linked to any of those encounters directly, so I think it would affect that issue as well. It'd be hard to stratify if the measure is at the patient level.
So I wanted to Raj, based on times. I think we're getting to the point that we understand that we want to include both ambulatory and inpatient, and that while this measure is kind of focused on the patient, you know, I think either of those makes sense, and I think we also want to make sure that it makes sense for what type of product it is. So if it's certified in both, that the product is able to say that it's either any of those CPT codes. But I think we may want to do a little bit more work because what if a product has different if there's different portals and then you have an in-person inpatient encounter but you don't have any ambulatory encounters, then do you have to count that? Right, because they could access both those or neither of those portals.
Right.
So I think we just have to think through a little bit more, kind of all the permutations a little bit more, which probably is better for an offline discussion.
Yeah,
my suggestion would be to make the denominator distinguish between the ambulatory domain and the inpatient domain by the SNOMED codes and CPT codes, and then that would be sort of the product indicator, and then the numerator actions, whether it's app authorization or portal access, those don't have anything to do with the ambulatory versus inpatient domain, so those would be reported regardless.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. So let's keep going on some of the other recommendations for further discussion. So the second bullet there, consider measuring the ratio of access for patient portal versus third-party apps. This is one of my recommendations because I think it'd be good for us to understand kind of how much access are we getting on the third-party apps versus portals. But I'm wondering if this is a kind of a second-tier one. So I guess my recommendation would be say, let's not say that it's not included yet. But let's also not say that it's discluded. And then as we look at the other sets of measures that we have based on kind of the totality of effort, we think what measures that we think are high priority, we would then determine if this one meets enough to include it as a recommendation or completely exclude it. But I welcome others' comments.
If numerator 1A, 1B, and 1C are all reported, wouldn't it just be possible to manipulate the data to get a ratio anyway?
Okay. All right. Yep. We'll look at that. All right. I think that could be the case.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll use that as the notion, and we'll remove this as a potential recommendation. So the next one then is consider collecting gender and social determinant data, including sexual orientation and gender identity. So we kind of we talked about this, and there was some, I think, strong recommendation to include it, and then there was some discussion about the complexity of collecting this data and using it as a segmentation for the measures. I guess where do we think we're at relative to making a strong recommendation that these be included as part of the segmentation that like race and ethnicity is already in the measure descriptions?
So I personally think this is one that should be included and probably one that's going to cut across several different measures. And so we may want to, even if we have others like that, we can pull those out in the report that state these are cross cutting versus ones that are specific to the to particular measures.
And Raj, I think we should also clarify if this is patient social determinants or if it's provider.
Yeah,
so those,
and also
those
watching
that are, those that are purchasing the software versus those that could be using it.
I guess my thinking based on the conversation was that these were the categories of the patient too. So it's not sure. The provider, and it's not the accessor either. So we don't have to worry about if a proxy person is accessing this. This is just for the patient.
Great, I agree.
So I think this is okay. Ahead. I think that gender and ethnicity are the two elements that are usually more readily available, but this other social determinants is the one that's going to obviously be more complex and probably not as prevalent in the current collection.
Yeah, I agree. So why don't we, I just want to make sure we're watching the clock here, and we need to leave plenty of time for the next set of measures. So let's stop discussion on these particular ones. Let's transition over to Jill, who can take over, is going to take over the discussion of the public health measures. And we can continue some work on and refinement on these set of measures asynchronously.
Great, thanks, Raj. So if we could go back to the slide deck, please. And just as a reminder that all the task force members have been given access to the Google Docs. So you'll be able to go in on the Excel spreadsheet, you can make notes, you can review the measures and add some comments before the meeting, and that would help the discussion as well. You also might be helpful to pull up the PowerPoint deck and the Google Docs during the discussion, because we'll be toggling back and forth between the PowerPoint and the recommendations that we're coming up with during our discussion. So Bryant and Sasha have volunteered to take us through this discussion. And so Bryant has asked that someone from ONC introduce the measure and give kind of a high-level overview of the public health measures. So if we could go to the next slide and do that.
This is Fred Blayman from Urban. I'm happy to kind of quickly walk through this.
Great, thanks.
A whole lot of time on the motivation. I think this was discussed in detail during the high tech meeting, and everyone's seen these slides before, especially from the motivation from a health and policy perspective. One key motivation I want to emphasize is that these data are typically, for the measures that we propose here, are not publicly available and are not typically collected or collected by the or within existing survey data. And so there's kind of a value added of collecting these types of measures. Also, they do apply to the certification criteria F1. The two main measures relate to public health, which address these two questions in terms of how frequently providers are using their certified health IT to send immunization and vaccine information to IIS, and how frequently providers are using their health IT to query IIS for immunization forecasts and histories. Next slide, please. And here are the two measures that address those questions. So on the left-hand side, you see the specifications for measure one and measure two. So the first measure looked at getting information on the percentage of vaccinated individuals whose immunization data was sent electronically to immunization information systems. The numerator would be individuals whose immunization information was electronically submitted to the registry. And the proposed denominator is the number of individuals with an immunization administered. The second measure captures queries, so the percent of IIS queries made per individuals with an encounter. In this case, what is a question open for discussion is defining that denominator, whether or not we want to use the number of individuals with an encounter, or potentially use a denominator consistent with the one first measure, such as the number of individuals with an immunization administered. For both these measures, we would, if you look at the second column, these are some of the consistent reporting elements and formats. We would want to collect all of these data separately by state, and also by state and different potential characteristics, such as the setting of the provider or the type of certified health IT product, and the state and age group to capture differences in different types of immunizations for adults, adolescents, and children and infants. Again, we would require like all measures to have the developers report the numerators and denominators and not just the percentages. That way, we can kind of manipulate the data and calculate percentages that are consistent and comparable. So if we want to look at number two as a percent of the number of individuals with an encounter or as a percent of the number of individuals with an immunization, we would have that flexibility to do so. There's also the similar comment of the frequency of reporting and the look-back period and how we would want to define that for the numerators and denominators. I think this is a comment that it applies to all the measures in terms of how we define encounters and over what time period. And for this measure, since we're requesting a lot of data at the state level and at the state and characteristic level, we don't think we would necessarily need to look at distribution, like quintile distributions or more detailed distributions, since we would already have such rich subgroup data, and we would already be requesting a lot of this data from developers to report in this area. So from here, I think I can pass this along to Brian. The next slide includes some discussion questions that we had on these measures, and I think probably Brian and the rest of the team had some additional questions for discussion to pose to the task force.
Thank you.
And maybe, sorry, Jill, quickly before we jump into that, Abby Sears has her hand up. You got it. Go for it.
Yeah. Abby, did you have a comment? We're not sure if it was for this discussion or the previous one.
I put it in the chat. Sorry, I'll take my hand down. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Abby. Okay, Bryant and Sasha, if you want to go forward.
Great. So I first of all wanted to, in preparation, wanted to summarize that we gathered input from recognizing that the public health measures focused on the immunization registry components, both for the reporting of the vaccine delivery to public health and the immunization registries that we operate, as well state public health, as well as the relatively new addition of a bi-directional query and response capability to get forecasting and histories back from those registries to be used for clinical decision making and in terms of what vaccine should be given in a visit. We totally recognize in the public health community that this is important and essential, and I'm sure with what people are seeing in the news these days, it's completely understandable. And we thank ONC for prioritizing these measures and having done that prep work that started on its path before the pandemic hit us and continued throughout. So thank you for that. We assembled some meetings in preparation for this to gather input from ERA, the Association of Immunization Registries, as well as some key participants that were involved in previous task force that are involved in immunization hub activities and interstate exchanges and try to understand how best the current state is, could be represented in successful use of these certified technologies. And I think some of the folks who were part of those discussions and contributed to that thinking are in the audience and may make comment during the public comment period, or feel free to chat in comments as we're progressing through this discussion. But I'm wondering, Sasha, should we put up the spreadsheet that we developed in those preparatory meetings, or how best do you think we should proceed?
Maybe we could talk briefly about these questions and then switch over to the spreadsheet, because I think we maybe answered the first one in some of our preparatory discussion and could just bring others up to speed.
Sounds good. So one thing that was addressed in our discussion was, as many of you are aware, public health is a federalized process. Each state is responsible for public health response within their jurisdiction. And as such, state laws do differ from state to state in terms of the authorization for immunization registries and what parts of that information can be shared federally, which explains, you know, some of the earlier assumptions that information is not necessarily made available, especially not at a line level to the CDC, for example. So for the to what extent do state laws prevent immunization data from being shared, there are oftentimes processes that would be put into place, and and for a vendor to have access to the information, they'd have to have business associate agreements or contractual agreements in place that allowed them to aggregate the information needed to operationalize these measures, making sure that those were compliant with the policies of the states in which those customers reside. Sasha, did you want to?
That's a good summary, and we had talked about this in respect to the patient access measures also, right? If the data use agreements that are in existence today between both registries and EHR users and EHR developers don't permit this type of data collection and use, then those agreements would have to be amended for the purposes of this reporting program. I don't know that it's particularly different for these measures than what we already covered with patient access. I think with that noted, we can kind of move on to the next question.
Yeah. Which I think the first two dot points I think are related in that that record level data, changes might be needed to be made to a given EHR system in order to aggregate information out of it as opposed and report it as opposed to tallying up on a record by record basis. Mapping those into appropriate age groups rather than reporting individual ages of every record, for example.
My thinking is that any type of stratification that we do is going to have some amount of complexity token. So I think it's just up to us to sort of prioritize where do we want to spend our complexity tokens across this and the other measures. Age of the patient is relatively simple in my mind, even if we wanted to group ages. That's pot- potentially simpler than state or setting, actually. I put into the chat even that if you say state, I'm immediately thinking from a reporting perspective, do we care about the state of the registry that the immunization is submitted to, the state of the patient's address, or the state of the provider's office location? All three of those could be the same. They could be different. But to write a consistent report and, you know, run it across different systems, we'd have to know. And then, you know, when you're thinking about your reporting complexity and the hardware, if you are going from a concept in a database about like an immunization administered and you want to get to, you know, the state of a location, you're traveling from the immunization administered record to maybe the patient record to the encounter record to an address. There's like a number of linkages because the immunization administration itself probably doesn't have a location on it. So all these things are possible. I think it's just going to be a question of, you know, where do we want to spend our complexity tokens and how do we make sure that we're clear enough if we decide we want to spend complexity tokens on something like state, that it's done consistently.
Yeah, and I think that understanding that these are likely to be annual measures, and that people are inherently mobile, it would make more sense to pick something that isn't going to change from year to year, like the location of the facility or of the provider is unlikely to move across state lines.
I actually think the simplest would be the state of the registry it's submitted to or queried from, personally.
In case there is a provider that happens to be across state lines, but their patients all preferentially use the neighboring state's registry, that's possible. But have to
just because the reporting would be simpler on the registry versus the provider's office location, especially when providers practice in multiple locations or there are temporary vaccine clinics and so forth.
Yeah, I think there could be. I'll have to do some thinking about that and consult with ERA if there are instances where providers are needing to report to two different registries because their patient population lives in two different jurisdictions. That definitely raises some complexity. But
I think we should make sure that we're aligning with what other programs. Definitely just we don't want to, you know, as we talk through this, making sure that providers aren't burdened at all. So if they're having to report in different ways, that we're not adding to that burden. So it sounds like we can move that to a recommendation that that we do that level of reporting. Is there any comments on that particular piece?
What, Jill, are you suggesting as the recommendation?
That one of the levels of reporting is the state level of the provider.
I actually prefer the state of the registry.
The state of the registry. Okay. Any comments on that? Is that something that we can add to the recommendations?
Sasha, this Steve? Would you be able to help just a little bit then on kind of then the numerator then? So if it's based on is it all the ones that should have been reported to the registry or the ones that were reported to the registry? And then how would you determine that it should have been reported?
Or is it just failure? So I'm looking at measure one, and the denominator I think will be the number of immunizations administered. I'm not going to say the number of individuals with an immunization because I think it will be actually more practical to have the denominator be the numbers of immunizations administered. The numerator will be the number of individuals whose the number of administrations whose information was electronically submitted to the registry, and you would have a stratification of the numerator if there were multiple states involved to say, okay, the denominator was 100, the numerator was 90, 30 of the numerator was to the Missouri registry, and 30 of the numerator was to the Illinois registry, and I'm blanking on how many more I had left in my numerator there doing math in my head. But It would be a stratification, not a separate numerator.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Support that.
And I think that would, so, I think that would be, that would add a little bit of complexity to installations in health systems across state lines, as you illustrated, Zasha, of, you know, stratifying the numerator across the different jurisdictions that they have a presence in. But I think that would be, that would show, would be a, and I'd comment, we, in our discussions, we added the word successfully submitted to public health or successfully submitted to the registry, differentiate a submission that wasn't successfully received or wasn't successfully formatted wouldn't count as a successful count in that measure. But yeah, I think that, Jill, does that answer your question?
It looks like it's, we're still having some discussion, and I see some comments by Mary Beth. Mary Beth, would you like to share what you put in the chat?
Mary Beth might not be active yet. Are you able to speak, Mary Beth? Otherwise, I can read the comment.
I think
yes,
Mary
not
Beth,
able to.
Yeah, not until the public comment period. So if you want to, Jill, if you just want to read her comments out loud, if you want to, that'd be fine.
Thank you. Thank you for that catch. So she wrote, just as a note that some IIS function at the county city level, such as Philadelphia or New York City, so a decision will need to be made to segment them out or roll them up at the state level.
Yeah, my thinking is that we know sort of how many outgoing interfaces there are. So if you have a city-specific or a jurisdiction-specific interface, any of those could be a stratification straightforwardly.
Yeah, so we, you know, city states like Los Angeles and New York City obviously might be handled differently, but yeah, perhaps any there are certain states, for example, where the registries are operated at the county level, not the state level.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess what I would really be suggesting is ditch the state concept and just stratify by registry.
That would
sort of level the registry is at, so that your numerator for measure one would give a registry stratification. In some cases, it may all be the same registry. In some cases, there would be multiple.
Okay. All right.
All right, the last two dot points, should we move on to those?
Yep.
So I think that the third dot point, I think, obviously, queries via a portal that's operated by the registry itself wouldn't be able to be reported by the EMR EHR vendor because of the nature of those products. So I think that doesn't bear or need much discussion. It would, it does, there should be some recognition when this measure is analyzed that many providers have made a conscious decision to, rather than implement, you know, especially if they don't give very many vaccines, rather than implementing an optional module for immunization registry automatic interface, they may have elected to continue to use a manual login portal to report the vaccines they've delivered or do the immunization forecasting. And I think that may still be true. It may be difficult for us to tease that out from this measure. Any comments on that, Sasha?
No.
And then the last dot point, We already had some discussions about the discussion of encounter versus patient, and in our prep discussion, I made the suggestion of have backed off from it that maybe we should make the denominator encounters at which a vaccine could be delivered or would potentially be appropriate, and of course that would be impossible to tease out as a denominator in a given EMR. So we need to come up with a denominator that does make sense. And I do think that although there'd be a great benefit in doing it by patient, so that you could see the patient over multiple different concepts, I think that encounters may be simpler. But I actually would like to, perhaps we should pull up the spreadsheet to look at the discussion that was.
Yep. To elaborate a little while we pull that up, I also felt that encounters would be simpler for Measure 2 than individuals. If we count by individuals, we would have to define, you know, for multiple encounters, what was expected to qualify in the numerator, and would sort of muddy the waters. If, you know, four encounters should theoretically get, you know, four different histories, but we got it at three instead out of the four, then we end up reporting that as either zero or one, and it like loses some of the granularity and usefulness.
Yeah.
I think.
And especially over what time period is a cluster of encounters still relevant? If you have three different visits within the same week period or month period, one query to the immunization registry for decision support might be sufficient for all of those. But if the visits were 3 or 6 months apart, maybe that query should have been repeated. So it's be difficult to interpret, especially in pediatric populations.
The cell I think that had our comments here was 6C, where we were noting some of the discussion about Measure 2, the considerations about having it be by individual with a numerator of the number of responses to queries. And I think after we kind of discussed through some of the notes that we jotted down here, we felt that it would likely make more sense to make the denominator here the encounters.
Anyone have any comments on that? So that's the second measure. That would be the denominator. So right now it's the number of patients with an encounter.
Yeah.
And they're recommend.
To summarize, I think we actually recommended changing both of the denominators and numerators. In this case, we went from individuals with an encounter to just encounters in the denominator. And in measure one, our suggestion was to go from number of individuals with an immunization administered to just number of immunizations administered.
Any comments on that? Steve?
Yeah, so I think I'm okay with the measure two saying it's encounter. And, you know, I think it's going to be a little vague in regards to what it truly means, but I think it gives us a good directional of kind of where things are going in regards to getting that history, and doesn't get us to have to spend a lot of our complexity tokens to understand, like, well, should that encounter actually been, or so I like that. I guess I'm concerned with changing the denominator of number one, but I'd maybe some clarity for the folks. Do immunization registries in general allow for a bulk upload? Because I'm thinking of, you know, kids that are getting, you know, potentially get two or three at a time. Is that one submission up to the registry, or is that a submission for each immunization as a single entry?
Yeah. That was actually part of what we talked through. I think there's two concepts here. One is, how do we report it and how is it transmitted? And transmission can vary. Bulk uploads are common. But I think what we want to measure is if a child got, in the course of one reporting period, which might be a year, if they received 10 different immunizations, as written, we're going to report either zero of one or one of one, because either the patient had it sent or they didn't. But I think what we were feeling was more meaningful was to say if the child received 10 immunizations, to report either, you know, maybe 9 of 10, because there could be differentiation even within that one patient's immunizations that would be more sort of useful to understand.
Okay, so I misunderstood. The numerator would be then the actual immunization, so in that sense.
Yeah, the doses.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, that
makes sense.
Exactly, and I think that otherwise we'd end up with measure one would have a larger numerator than denominator, which would be...
weird.
Really weird. Well, it should be weird. It should be larger than the denominator if kids are getting more than just the COVID vaccine. They should be getting all their vaccines. I think that's what we need to recall, is that it's there are multiple different VXUs that are going out the door from a given clinic. If Jill will permit, I'll read Mary Beth's comments.
Go ahead.
Some EHR EMRs send multiple administration immunizations in an HL7 message. Some send single messages for each immunization. But in either case, we support measuring doses rather than individuals. So I think that my hope would be that even for those bulk transmissions, the tallying of, you know, what the payload is of those bulk messages would still be able to report the total number of doses contained and successfully received by public health.
We have Zahid has said in the comment that he agrees with the vaccine administered in the denominator. And then Stephen Lane has his hand up. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So in general, and maybe you've covered this and I just spaced it out, but why do we want to look at immunization doses as opposed to individuals who had their immunizations reported? I mean, I thought that's where the suggested measure started, was individuals who had immunization data reported. You know, when we're comparing across the EHRs, which is really the point, I mean, we're not trying to fix public health reporting right now. We're trying to, you know, report on EHRs and their capabilities so that we can compare and contrast. It seems that we could keep it simply to the level of the individual who had at least an immunization reported, you know, in a year that they received at least one immunization. I'm just trying to keep it simpler.
My question, Stephen, was just, if someone had 9 of 10 of their immunizations reported, do we report it as 0 or 1? And then as we were prepping, we sort of realized it wasn't clear to us whether we preferred to see that as 0 because only 9 of 10 were reported, or as 1 because at least one was reported. And it seemed like knowing 9 of 10 were reported was kind of more useful as a number than either 0 or 1 for the individual, and that kind of led us that direction.
Yeah, and I guess my response would simply be if we're evaluating the EMRs, you know, the products, which is what we're here to do, the details, you know, for a given individual of whether, you know, all of them could be reported, whether they were also tested, fully reported, et cetera, that seems to me, you know, those are kind of local issues. They're sort of, you know, how they configured the system, how the jurisdiction is doing things, et cetera. It doesn't seem to me that it reflects on the EHR so much as the fact that a patient who received at least one immunization in the reporting period had at least one immunization successfully reported to the registry. And again, I'm just thinking about keeping it simple, that's all.
Yeah, I think, Steve, I appreciate where you're going, and I actually at one point was thinking along the lines of could we use this measure to identify inequities in immunization delivery by stratifying it by person and then stratifying those persons by race and ethnicity. But backed off from that because this, you know, perhaps that measure is better assessed in other components of the program, of the reporting program. I think that trying to think about how this data would be used to evaluate performance of EHRs by vaccine or by administration, to me, makes a lot more sense, because if you see any drop-off, I mean, ideally, it'll be everybody will be at 100%. Every vaccine that's delivered gets reported to public health. And if we start to see drop-offs in a given vendor or in a given jurisdiction, it may be an indication that there's, you know, a work process gap or flaw. A new vaccine has been delivered and there was no capability in that EMR to select that vaccine, for example. So it was still given and recorded, but wasn't able to be transmitted. It'll be interesting to see how that is teased out.
So it sounds like we still have more discussion on this before we can make it a recommendation. Any other comments before we move on to the next item? All right. So, Brent, why don't you and Sasha move to the next part of the evaluation?
All right.
I think
go back up. Yeah, go ahead.
Do the reporting frequency and look back period?
In the spreadsheet. I think that was the last of our dot points, Jill, in the discussion questions.
So we had some conversation also about sort of how frequently should this measure be reported and what would be the look back period. The consensus in our recommendation to the group here is that we'll probably want a consistent reporting frequency across all the measures. Kind of from the EHR developer perspective, it seems strange to me if you had an EHR reporting program and you reported some measures on different frequencies than the other measures. So I'm kind of making maybe a global assumption that, you know, if the program is going to involve reporting annually or twice annually, that would be the case across the measures. The look back period, there was some interest in having it be at least 12 months so that the seasonal impact of some vaccination schedules would be accommodated in a way that it might not if we only reported for example, one quarter. But also with look back period, there is a consideration that the longer the look back period, the more processing power required from the organizations where the data collection is happening, and it might be the most judicious to limit to 12 months rather than trying to you know, do a 24-month reporting period, or sorry, look-back period.
So,
Zahid has a comment.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead, Zahid. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I was muted. So I think if the denominator were a patient, I would suggest that the look-back period became important. But if the denominator turns out to be just the vaccine administered and the numerator is just the reporting of it, I'm not even sure if the look-back period would add any value, but it would just add more complexity.
Yes, if it's administrations, I think, you know, the shorter periods would be the same in essence.
I mean, you're basically counting the number of administrations and seeing how many of those were reported.
Yeah.
So whatever was done within a reporting period should be the denominator.
Yeah, but we wouldn't want, you know, say, for example, a primary care clinic has only adult patients and the only vaccines they give are seasonal flu. They pick their reporting period to be July through September when next year's vaccine isn't available yet. Their denominator and numerator are going to be zero and zero. So a quarter wouldn't work. We'd need to have a year.
But maybe long. Then... Yeah, maybe then a yearly reporting period would make sense.
Yeah, that's why we're suggesting that.
Right, but if it's a year reporting period, it should cover most of those scenarios. But what I'm talking about is the look-back period, because you could have a one-year, two-year look-back period in either case. And I'm proposing for discussion that if the denominator were a patient, I would understand that you would want to know if the patient got vaccinated in the previous 12 months. But here, we sort of are pegging it to the administrations and seeing how many of those got transmitted.
Yeah, I agree. I think if we have a denominator of administrations, we don't need to look back beyond the reporting period at all. It would just be administrations in the reporting period.
Right.
1 year, yeah.
Yep.
Which is still a look back. It's a look back for the previous 12 months.
Well, we in the quality reporting world, a look back actually goes prior to the reporting period in question.
Okay.
So the reporting period here, I think we're thinking of is 12 months, like January 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2021. But then in, you know, say March of 2022, we're gathering data for the 2021 reporting period. But we're not, if we're just looking at administrations in 2021, looking back to some time in 2020. But some quality measures do that, which is, I think, where the concept of a look back comes in. But to Zahid's excellent point, I don't think we're actually proposing a look back here, and that is a nice way to conserve complexity tokens.
Anyone disagree with that? Can we make that a recommendation? And that would be if the vaccine administered is the denominator.
I'm okay with that. I think that, you know, as long as, you know, the look back effectively becomes looking at last year's report, not have to do a technical repeat look back.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for teaching me, Sasha, about the ontological definition of look back in this situation.
Well, thank you for Zahid for raising it and helping us conserve our tokens.
How many tokens do we have, Sasha?
let me count them.
All right.
All right. That you guys have in your document?
I think that was we've covered the majority of what we had discussed in kind of our prep meeting between Brian and I and the immunization experts, there was some discussion throughout, which you've probably heard in our repeated comments about tokens, about the feasibility of the various permutations of the measures and some of the stratifications that were there. One of our priorities, obviously, would be to make it as low burden as possible on the healthcare organizations whose data would be necessary to be gathered. But some of the feasibility, I think, will have to be assessed once we understand the final sort of proposed measure. We also talked about some of the interpretation challenges, because there's certainly ways in which the measures will not reflect on the system doing the reporting. One of the examples of that was that if a immunization registry has a downtime or is misconfigured in some fashion, that might result in a large number of unsuccessful messages going out from the EHR or not getting query responses back from the registry, but wouldn't, of course, reflect on the EHR submitting that data at all. And so, you know, I think a lot of that will have to be understood when analyzing the data.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I think Brian is wanting to scroll up.
Yeah, I just wanted I wanted to point out to the other task force members that we made a change in for reporting measure two here to make this immunization query and response to kind of neutralize that, you know, some immunization registries that's forecasting, some immunization that's history, some it's both, and that we can kind of co-mingle both of those would be successful demonstration of that bi-directional capability with your immunization registry.
And I agree, Bryant, because there again, to differentiate would be to, you know, essentially attribute to the EHR product different functionality that exists at the level of the registry.
Yeah, it originally said history as the header here, and we changed that, or forecasting, I think it said, as the header here, and we changed it to query and response. So everybody's okay with that.
Any comments? Okay. Brian and Sasha, do you have any other recommendations?
I want to defer the remainder of my time to open public comment and see if my colleagues from the immunization registry would like to chime in. I do want to say that, I made this comment in our opening session, I think that, and I want to remind my task force members or colleagues that public health is not solely immunization delivery, and I'm hopeful that we'll have time in our future sessions to address some of the other draft measures that were considered. I think given the task force recommendations from the Public Health Data Systems Task Force needing to prioritize and elevate gaps that we're seeing in individual EMR systems successful implementation of some of the optional public health measures, that we have an opportunity here to really advance public health by highlighting and using as a tracking capability our progress in implementation of some of the other public health measures. But I'm happy we're getting vaccine across the line first.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Sasha. Are there any task members that have points that Sasha or Brian didn't bring up that you'd like to discuss? All right. Hearing none, can we bring up the document of what we discussed, the recommendations, or those that are still under consideration? Okay.
I used track changes in here while we were discussing to try to capture what I thought we had agreed upon or we were recommending for further discussion. But please do encourage the rest of the task force to suggest edits if I didn't capture something correctly.
Yeah, so is that Sasha speaking?
Yes.
Yeah, Sasha, do you want to go ahead and just present this, the agreed upon and recommendations and for further?
Yeah, let's scroll up to measure one first, actually. So it sounded like we had consensus that changing the denominator of measure one to number of immunizations administered was a recommendation we would make, and that we would suggest the numerator of measure one be the number of administrations whose information was electronically submitted to a registry. One of the reasons for that, so the third bullet is not really a recommendation, it's a rationale, but it would help address the confusion of the numerator being larger than the denominator. We talked about stratification in the fourth bullet, indicating that the stratification could be by the registry submitted to, which avoids some of the complexity of stratifying by state and actually gets more granular information about registry. One of our goals overall was to minimize burden on provider organizations in data collection, and we suggested the same reporting frequency as the other measures in the program, annually, 12-month reporting period, no look back. We acknowledged that there may need to be changes to data use agreements to be able to report this data. We'd have to clearly specify any stratifications that were going to be included, and stratifications are possible, but we would probably want further conversation about where to prioritize to invest that complexity. And then on to measure two here, a lot of this is the same. Again, we have the same goal of minimizing burden on provider organizations for data collection. We suggested the denominator be number of encounters. As with the patient access measures that are based on encounters, we would need a definition with CPT and SNOMED codes. The numerator of measure two would be the number of query responses from the IIS received. Again, one of the rationales for updating this would be to avoid the confusion of the numerator being larger than the denominator. And we had the same look back recommendation on measure two. For further discussion, we have the same data use consideration about agreements. Stratifications, again, would have to be clearly defined. And we'd have to determine where it was sort of most valuable to us to invest in that added complexity. And I'll just all of those for get rid of all the green.
Thanks, Sasha, and thank you, Bryant, for presenting this. We're going to pull this together, and we'll be sending this out to the group to look at, and you can continue to have your feedback captured there. I want to allow enough time for our public discussion, but Bryant, you had your hand up. Did you have another comment before we move to public comments?
Just going back, I want to make sure that I've made it clear. One of the things that we discussed in preparation is making sure that it's not just the submission, but the successful submission, which may involve tallying acknowledgement messages coming back from the immunization registry, identifying successful, error-free submission. I'll edit that in the document.
Thanks, Bryant. All right, so now I think we're a little bit early, but we wanted to allow enough time because it sounded like we had a few on for public comments. So I'm going to turn that over for public comments.
All right. Thank you, Jill, and great discussion, everyone. Let's pause here. And, operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first comment is from Mary Beth Carrillo Zaira. Please proceed.
Thank you so much. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So first off, from the American Immunization Registry perspective, we just want to say thank you for considering this measure. And we recognize all public health measures are important, but given what we've all experienced with the last 18 months of the pandemic, I think immunization really bubbles to the surface as something we need to pay attention to. So I support all the conversation, and thanks for letting me jump in via the chat window. I just want to really underscore that piece about successful submission of administered doses. We want to make sure that the messages coming across to the IIS are well configured, and the IIS community has done a lot to make sure we're in alignment with standards for acknowledgement messages so that we can send back if a message is inappropriately configured or inappropriately coded. So we will do everything we can on our side to make sure that those acknowledgement messages coming across are really meaningful and allow action on the part of either the EHR or the provider if the message needs to be modified or resubmitted because of an error. The other piece that I just want to emphasize is, and this is really more a forward look, if there's ever an opportunity to validate or better coordinate efforts and have some sort of validation from the IIS side, ERA and our IIS members are more than happy to try to coordinate that. You know, I think we've done a lot of work through our immunization integration program with HIMSS to really look at interoperability from all sides, IIS, EHRs, HIEs, clinicians. And so down the road, if there's an opportunity or an interest in validating some of this information from the IIS side, we'd be happy to partner on that. So I know there are other folks who want to weigh in, so I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to take part and looking forward to see where this goes.
Great, thank you.
Right, no further comments at this time.
All right, thank you. Jill?
Great. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate the discussion, and thank you again, Sasha and Brian, and everyone's contributions. Great discussion. Raj, any comments, final comments from you?
No, I think this is a lot of great progress here, so I appreciate everybody staying really engaged. And I know we have a lot to do here on the task force. I know there was one open question about one of the potential future measures or optional measures, and ONC Urban Team, please help me with the terminology here, but I believe we need a couple volunteers to take that one on if possible.
This is Gary Ozanich. Yeah, it's the data quality measure, which we believe is cross-cutting across at least the first two we've discussed thus far. It is listed as a future measure under the standards domain.
It's on slide 30, if you want to go to that slide.
Yeah, maybe we could jump to that quickly. So we do want to make sure that this task force work group is providing recommendations on that particular measure. I recognize that this is, another one that we have to take on, but this is critically important work. So any volunteers for folks that would want to take this one on?
What? Sorry, I'm just looking at the request for public feedback. What page is this on?
I do not have that information.
Oh, I think I found it. I think it's 13. Does that sound right?
Hey, Sasha, you're going to have to use all your tokens for this one.
Yeah, this one might require infinity tokens. So
I think we might. So would Jill and Raj, would this measure be a ideal placeholder for the demographic completeness capabilities that we've identified as being lacking in public health reporting, that we don't have race and ethnicity, we don't have complete names, and missing from the list of potential data elements here, and the others question mark would be correctly formatted address and phone number, home, both home, cell, and potentially work. We're getting in many cases still to this day, incomplete demographics reported to public health makes it really hard to do our job. And this data element could do that. I'd be happy to volunteer that's appropriate.
To me, it makes sense to bring that thinking in here for sure. Because this is a future measure, I take it that this has not been a top priority, you know, in the prioritization scheme here. I see the our discussion at the last meeting on the importance of capturing social demographic information. From that, what emerged to me was that it is a high priority. So I think just figuring out how these two things intersect, I think will be important. Brian, if you're willing to take this one on, I realize it's yet another one for you. That would be fantastic. If there's a partner in crime that wants to join Bryant, that would be helpful.
What call are we talking about this one on?
Great question. We may need to squeeze this in with one of the others. So I think looking at the calendar, we have the next.
The further in the summer, the better. This next couple of weeks is a little pressured with HIMSS and CDC grant deadlines.
I think what we could try and do is put it 2 weeks. Let me see. Well, why don't we circle back on the timing of this? I know that'll impact who could potentially take it on, but why don't we circle out to the work group with when we think we could fit this into the schedule, and then we can see if that fits.
Okay, I could probably team up with Bryant again if that's useful, but would want to make sure I was going to be able to be on the call on the day that we were discussing it, of course.
Yeah.
Well, if you both are willing to take it on. Could you do it on, you know, one of the next two, just now that we have the meeting schedule up here, on the 5th or the 12th?
That's going to be really difficult with preparation for HIMSS. We're Washington State doing two different interoperability showcase demonstrations.
I could do the 12th. I'm also could do the 19th, so it sounds like it's up to Brian.
The 19th would be much better for me.
Jill, do you think we can slip that in on the 19th?
Yeah, I think that we could do that. This highlights and impacts all of the measures and so far the discussion that's been brought up about what additional information needs to be captured. So I think it fits well.
My only worry if we do that is that just puts us right against when we want to have all those recommendations. We want to have that, you know, that report for review by the whole group. And so I have a feeling that this is going to be a meaty one. If we try and tackle it on the 12th, Sasha, you said you're able. Is there, I think,
yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is there anybody else that would be willing to join Sasha on the 12th? And then, Brian, we could get your directed feedback on this, you know, during that review cycle.
I think I'm actually on stage for a breakfast session at HIMSS on the 12th, so I may not be able to do both.
Yeah, no, I understand. So I think what we're looking for here is if there's another task force member that would join Sasha to tackle this one, present on the 12th, and then we can brief Bryant when he has time so that we make sure we get his valuable feedback.
This is Zahid. I can volunteer.
Perfect. Thank you, Zahid. So we have Zahid and Sasha for this particular measure, and we'll add time, we'll get that into the schedule for August 12th.
Sounds good.
Thank you both so much. And
Sasha, you're going to take the lead on this, right? So you'll contact me, I guess.
Yeah.
For anything. Okay, great.
I'll send your meeting request.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you both. Thank you to the rest of the task force members, ONC and Urban, and folks from the public that joined. We appreciate it. Same time, same place next week, I believe.
Yes. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks
all.